is the Ammon Endowed Chair. I'm sorry, the Pinizotto Endowed Chair of OB/GYN at that institution. He's a professor at Thomas Jefferson University, as well as the College of Health Sciences. And he has served as the principal investigator of several large NIH-funded studies, including the work he's currently involved in. And he's been the author of several seminal papers, including one in The Lancet in 2006, which essentially demonstrated the value of using oral misoprostol to prevent postpartum hemorrhage, which, as you know, is one of the leading causes of maternal mortality in the developing world. Most recently, he and I co-authored a guest editorial for BMC Public Health on maternal mortality, along with Nancy Sloan. So Dr. Derman is going to run the panel here, and so please join me in welcoming our panelists and Dr. Derman.
It's great to have friends like Dr. Khan. And so I want to thank you, Omar, and the organizing committee for again having us here. And I know it's a bit challenging on an early Monday morning just at the beginning of the meeting. And yet, if I'm correct, there will not be any seats very, very soon. So first, an apology from Dr. Malcolm Potts. Many of us love to be there when he speaks. There was a crisis at Berkeley that he needed to address en route to his travels to Ethiopia tonight. So he's to be forgiven. After 40, 50 years of working in the field, we certainly owe him that. But we have a very distinguished panel. I'm actually going to have the panelists introduce themselves when they come up and talk a little bit about the work that they do, because I don't know that I can do them justice. But on my right, my colleague, Dr. Pat Hibbard, from the NIH Global Research Network. We've worked together for the past 10 years. It's wonderful to have her here. Next to her, Dr. Douglas Huber. I guess I've known Doug probably 30 years, if not more. And he has been involved probably with more international organizations than I can point a finger to. But it's great to have you here, Douglas, and a newfound friend, Dr. Jonathan Spector, who comes to us from Harvard prior to his having joined the think tank in international health at Novartis. So we're going to have a very, very, you know, fascinating discussion. And because we have one slot, there will be room for generating questions and answers as we go forward. I was really taken by the theme, Think Global, Act Local. And we're busy putting a CTSA grant together, and I began to realize that, you know, many of the problems that we talk about globally actually occur in the United States. And so I was sort of compelled to begin and introduce this panel with some of the issues that we find right here in our own backyard. We can't forget our own population, even as we talk about the entire international agenda. So nothing to disclose. And global health, we sort of want to look for a definition of global health. Everybody talks about it. What does it mean? And I sort of pulled two definitions, one from The Lancet in 2009, another one from a public health journal in Scandinavia. And I think this sort of sets the frame. So an area of study, research, and practice that places a priority on improving health and achieving health equity for all people worldwide. And then, actually, to embellish it more, Dr. Kickbush says they transcend national borders. And I think that's what we're all about at APHA. So these are good sort of discussions to begin with. And it doesn't take us very long to take a look at where the United States is. And there are two numbers. We kick around 39th or 24th. It almost doesn't matter where you want to see maternal mortality in the United States. The point of the matter is that we're placed next to Saudi Arabia and just a little bit ahead of Iran, nowhere near Italy or Spain, that point number one or two, or even Greece, which all of its economic downturns is still doing a whole lot better than we are in terms of maternal mortality. So these are devastating numbers, and when we think about what we spend, they're even more devastating. So this is a CDC slide that some of you may be familiar with. It says, dying to have a child. And we thought we had it right. In 1987, we had reduced our maternal mortality to 6.6 deaths for 100,000 live births. How wonderful. And since that time, it's been going in the wrong direction. And in fact, we've doubled the maternal mortality in the last 25 years. So why is that? And we'll talk a little bit about why that might be the case. But even more important is the whole issue of disparities. And if we take a look at who's dying, it turns out that among the African-American women in America, we have about 35 deaths per 100,000 live births, as compared to 11 deaths in the Caucasian population. That is very significant, and that disparity continues to increase over time, and I'll show you a graphic on that in a moment. If we take a look at who in the United States maybe has the best data sets, the state of California has been at it for a long time, and New York City is particularly good. And when we take a look at these disparities in terms of mortality, four times the rate for African-American women in California, six times the rate in New York City. And what's amazing, as these numbers control for poverty, for education, for BMI, for obesity, and for lack of prenatal care or pre-existing conditions. So what are the issues that are causing this difference? And that, I guess that's sort of a way to win the Nobel Prize. If you can figure it all out, probably there's good hope ahead. So just to give you one concrete example of what's going on in New York City, pulmonary embolism in terms of cause of death is probably about number four or five in the United States. So with 32 cases a couple of years ago in New York City of women who died from pulmonary embolism. Of that, 28 of those 32 were in African American, none were in Caucasian or non-Hispanic white population, zero. And then when you take a look at deaths in California from PPH, from preeclampsia, eclampsia, and infection, similar patterns begin to emerge. So this is really a crying situation for us that we need to put high on our priority list. And take a look at this curve. If you take a look at the slight upward slope on the bottom, this is our Hispanic population, our non-Hispanic white population. And if you take a look, we begin already dramatically at increased rates in 2006 in the African-American population and continue to go upward. So this is really, really a tremendous problem that we need to address. So despite between $82 and $98 billion a year in childhood-related care, I think you would agree with me that we have really a poor return on our investment. And we all need to be mobilized to go ahead and address this issue. And sort of with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to my colleague, Dr. Douglas Huber. And let me just say that a lot of us, you know, talk the talk. Dr. Huber and his wife, Sally Faith, who's right there in the audience, have really, you know, walked the walk. We talked last night over faculty dinner about the 2 years that I spent on the front lines living in Afghanistan. And let me tell you, I'm not so sure I could have done it, Doug. Really impressive stuff. And they're going to report back. He's going to report on some of what they've learned during that point of time. Dr. Huber. So, we know why women die. We heard about it. Severe bleeding, postpartum hemorrhage. We know what to do about it. Oxytocin, misoprostol, you can give it out in the house. We've demonstrated that we can reduce the risk of postpartum hemorrhage by about 50%. Eclampsia, leading cause of death in Latin America, and number one, probably close to being number one in the United States, just being able to use magnesium sulfate appropriately and do the referral. Infections, we know what we can do about infections too, have availability of antibiotics, have good surveillance. And so it isn't a matter of new technology. We know what to do. And also unsafe abortion, which we need to talk about in terms of sepsis, because that presents a very major piece. And if indeed we do have access to contraception, we can reduce this unsafe abortion rate by quite a bit. So we also know that malaria, AIDS, and TB do affect pregnancies and do affect outcomes overseas. But this is really a compelling slide out of California, but is representative of the United States as a whole. So when I speak overseas, I usually talk about those three things: hemorrhage, infection, sepsis, and preeclampsia. And if we take a look at why people are dying in the United States, suddenly cardiovascular disease and cardiomyopathies have begun to creep up, and they've sort of stayed under the radar scope. And while some of them are present before pregnancy, the fact of the matter is that the combination of cardiomyopathy and underlying cardiovascular disease, when you add them together, both in California and across the United States, may be the leading cause of maternal mortality now in the United States. And so when we think about where we ought to put our efforts, this is going to be one area, and I want to suggest to you that this trend is going on across the world. And why is that? It's because of obesity. And this is really a compelling theme. So we know that a half of all the pregnant women in the United States are overweight or obese. 8% have a BMI of over 40. They're morbidly obese. And unfortunately, that sits very highly among our African-American women, our Mexican-American women, but even the Caucasian population. One-third of those fall into that category. So it's an area that we have seen dramatic changes in 20 years. Take a look at that light blue bar on the left, less than 10% prevalence rates, and we're going down to over 30 or 40% now as we look in this 20 years, how dramatically this has changed in the United States. So the question really is this only a U.S. phenomenon, or is this really a global phenomenon that we need to go ahead and address? Because one of the things that we look at in the U.S. is mortality, and I showed you that data earlier, that U.S. mortality continues to decline, to increase in terms of maternal mortality, but for every death we have about 100 near misses, and we continue to learn from these near misses on what perhaps we ought to be doing. So if we look at some of the morbidities, three times the risk of gestational diabetes, three times the risk of preeclampsia, twice the risk of macrosomia, almost a half, 50% chance of having a cesarean section, and of course infection and delayed wound healing, not a good thing in the developing world. So let's take a look at India. These are just preliminary data that are coming in, even though they're a couple of years old, and they do this family health survey in India, and they looked at two surveys a few years apart, and they saw in one survey there was an 11% rate of obesity, primarily in the urban areas, which has moved to 15%, and the most rapid rate of growth is in the rural areas. There's nothing more dangerous than having a preterm baby subjected, that can't get around as they grow up, subjected to inappropriate foods. So the outcome, it's a double whammy. So they found in India that 35% of all maternal deaths were in obese women. So that's really dramatic. Nobody's ever spoken about that. And the offspring of these women have more congenital malformations, more macrosomia, shoulder dystocia, very hard to deal with in a primary care setting, preterm birth, and of course IUFDs. And if we look at a population in Africa reported out of Nigeria, but there is other data from the Senegal and other places in Africa, similar rates of diabetes, gestational diabetes fourfold, and macrosomia fourfold, and having a C-section in these countries is challenging to begin with, and we take a look at these rates, and we know it's just the tip of the iceberg that we're going to be seeing as we move forward. And this is a WHO statement that doesn't get enough attention. Obesity is the most prevalent health threat the world over. 1.6 billion adults are overweight, 400 million are obese, and 8% are morbidly obese, just like the data in the United States. Some compelling numbers here. So I want to conclude our session and then take questions for the panel with these two concluding slides. So the United States is challenged to reduce its increasing rate of maternal mortality, which disproportionately affects African American women. I think we've shown you that data. While postpartum hemorrhage, eclampsia, and infection are the leading causes of death without question in the developing world, we already know what to do to prevent the majority of these deaths, and I think some of the plans that you've heard about in terms of contraception, in terms of checklists, these need to be implemented very, very soon. The obesity revolution took about 20 years in the United States, but it's occurring more rapidly on a global basis, with obese women disproportionately adding to the maternal mortality burden. And finally, as with challenges in the global tobacco use, and many of us have worked in this area, we need to address the nutritional issues that affect the health and intrauterine environment of women. And with that, I thank you very much, and we'll take questions from our panel. And we have about 10 minutes. Not bad. Please, just stand up, please. Introduce yourself and maybe speak loudly so we can all hear you. So Dr. Spector showed in his slide the WHO seal, and that seal of approval is very, very important. We had demonstrated the use of misoprostol as being effective, but until WHO put it on the essential medicine list, it didn't go viral, it didn't go worldwide. And having WHO as a partner from the very outset is really compelling in terms of uptake in the developing world. Great. Thank you. Any additional questions?
half of the community health workers were women. This was also innovative and new for Afghanistan, and the Minister of Public Health actually approved that kind of dramatic change, you know, for Afghanistan, where it was at that point. So yes, in many situations, depending on the ethnic group, in this case Pashtun, Sunni, were more conservative than Shia communities, where in fact a man, mullah in this case, and community health worker could give injections. But by and large, the women were key in that. But as we've all discussed very often in the family planning area, men can be gatekeepers or obstacles in this. So the view of mullahs, who are also husbands and fathers and brothers themselves, was quite key. And so there was definite direct interest. And husbands, particularly in Afghanistan, often needed to accompany their wife to the clinic. So for her to have to go walk 2 hours each way to the clinic, accompanied by a man, becomes a non-starter in terms of getting access to contraception. So that's why we also found the men saying, you know, if our wives don't have to walk, you know, that far to the facility to get an injection, why not? If the community health worker right here, she, and in some cases he, but mostly she, can give it. Thanks.
So thank you very much. I think we're exactly at 10 o'clock. Dr. Hibbard ran to a Gates meeting in San Diego. I think everybody's on an airplane. I'm heading to India tomorrow. I want to thank you all for coming and participating in this program. Thanks so much.